It was the year AD 130. Hadrian had ruled the Roman Empire for more than a decade. He toured its far-flung provinces, attempting to transform a conquest empire into a unified commonwealth. And yet, one people in particular were not aligned with Hadrian's grand vision. Under the Romans, the Jewish people had been subjugated to some of the worst brutality imaginable, a fact they had not forgotten. Under the eventual Roman Emperor Titus, their capital city, Jerusalem, as well as the great Jewish temple, were leveled to the ground. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were enslaved or murdered. And now, once again, under Hadrian in 130 AD, the Jews in Judea would fight yet once more for what seemed an impossible dream, the rebirth of an independent Jewish state in the Holy Land. Would they succeed this final time? Find out on this episode of the Pax Romana podcast. Episode 38, Rome and the End of Israel's Independence. Folks, just a short plug. If you haven't yet, please pick up my book, Pax Romana, P-O-X, Pax, Pax Romana, The Plague That Shook the Roman World. It's out with Princeton University Press. It's available anywhere books are sold. The reviews are looking good. Both Amazon and Goodreads show plenty of 4- and 5-star reviews. And I hope you're also enjoying this podcast. It would help me a lot if you'd give the podcast a rating and even leave a little bit of a review. All right, let's get to today's episode. I think it's safe to say the Emperor Hadrian wildly underestimated the ferocity of Jewish nationalism in AD 130 when he visited the ruined site of Jerusalem and proclaimed his plans to found a new city and a new temple. Now, this new city was called Aelia Capitolina. Aelia comes from Hadrian's own family name, Aelius, while Capitolina speaks to the city's proposed founding divinity. This is not Yahweh, the god of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but Jupiter Capitolinus. This is the supreme god of the city of Rome. Jews were offered, in fact, no heritage whatsoever in the city of David. Instead, the site would be populated by Rome's military veterans and migrants from Rome's provinces. Aelia Capitolina was going to be a cosmopolitan city, a kind of Rome away from Rome. We know that Hadrian saw this new city as a break from the site's Jewish past because coins survive from the first year of Aelia Capitolina's founding. They show Hadrian's head and titles on the one side, just like a normal Roman coin. On the other side, though, Hadrian accompanies a team of oxen as they plow the earth. Now, the message of the coin is crystal clear. Hadrian was not going to restore the Jewish homeland, but he was burying over 1,000 years of culture and history under a new city dedicated both to himself and to a foreign god. And the plowing imagery, by the way, was not mere symbolism, and it did not simply occur on just the coinage. There was an opening ceremony to celebrate the founding of the city. And there, a Roman provincial governor took a literal plow to the ground on the site of the city, as well as to the Temple Mount. Now, Hadrian presumably thought that Jewish resistance was completely suppressed at this point and he had nothing to worry about. He was wrong. In fact, carefully and purposefully this time, not like previous revolts, Jewish leaders formed and then put into motion a strategy to liberate the site of Jerusalem from Hadrian's globalizing agenda. Now, very few details survive of their plans, but we have this note on the war from the Roman senator Cassius Dio. This is what he says, quote, "At first, the Romans took no account of the Jews. Soon, however, all Judea had been stirred up, and the Jews everywhere were showing signs of disturbance, were gathering together and giving evidence of great hostility to the Romans, partly by secret and partly by overt acts." That's Cassius Dio's Roman History. You get the full reference in the show notes. I think what Cassius Dio alludes to here is that the Jewish militia participated both in overt confrontations with garrisons of Roman soldiers, but also engaged in some guerrilla tactics. Now, who were the leaders of this revolt? We actually know a little bit about the main figure at the head of the revolt. His name was Simon Bar Kokhba, and he found himself leading an emergent Jewish state within the first year of fighting. Bar Kokhba's militia not only expelled Roman soldiers from the side of Jerusalem, so mission accomplished, but it would quickly take control of a much larger territory. In fact, quite a lot of what was once part of the historic kingdom of Judah. Bar Kokhba accumulated victory after victory, even against fully equipped Roman legions. And within months, hundreds of thousands of Jewish men flocked to his lead, transforming this ragtag militia into a serious army with numbers that were comparable to the combined military strength of the entire Roman emperor. How about that? Now, why did people follow this guy? Well, the name Bar Kokhba means son of the star. And this is a moniker which some of his followers would have associated with a prophecy given in the early days of Israel's conquest of the land of Canaan over 1,000 years ago. And that prophecy reads as follows, quote, "A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. It shall crush the forehead of Moab and break down all the sons of Sheth." That's Numbers 24, verse 17. Under Roman occupation, many Jews saw this prophecy as a hopeful word to be fulfilled in their time, that God was going to raise up a Messiah to deliver the Jews from their Roman oppressors. And Bar Kokhba, the son of the star, seemed to be this long-awaited deliverer. And so by the year 132, maybe 133 at the latest, Bar Kokhba was pronounced the Prince of Israel. And then for roughly 2 years, this messianic figure successfully ruled over an independent Jewish state. They got what they wanted. This, however, was a wartime government. His army was conscripted. He demanded that all inhabitants of the land he controlled, including Jews who believed in a different Messiah, one that had already come, Jesus Christ. Bar Kokhba wanted everyone to unite under his rule, and so Jews that remained Christians in his territory were persecuted and rounded up, and some of them were executed. But for the most part, Bar Kokhba's name was gold in that area. Even private contracts that we have that survive from this period, like small contracts like marriage agreements and land sales, reference Bar Kokhba as the Prince of Israel. So many people clearly had hope in his government. And that government minted coins with images calling back to Jewish culture and history and religion. The legends on these coins are bold, proclaiming slogans like the redemption of Israel and the freedom of Jerusalem. Especially prominent on the coins, and this is pretty interesting, were images of the old temple. It had been over 60 years since it had been destroyed, but the temple still lived on in the memory of Jews in the province, and it held tremendous symbolic value to the rebellion. Perhaps the hope was to eventually rebuild a third temple on the site. But I think these coins are kind of a metaphor for what was going on at the time. These were not Jewish shekels. Rather, what the Jewish mint had done was borrow Roman silver coins, and then they struck their designs over the top of them. In other words, the Jewish symbolism was really just a facade, and in many ways, so too was the Bar Kokhba government. The Romans had no intention of letting Judea go. By around AD 134, 135, Hadrian called up a general who had served on the island of Great Britain and marched him across the entire Roman Empire. And that may seem excessive, but Hadrian really needed a leader that was familiar with provinces prone to rebellion and revolt, and Britain was one of those provinces. We actually talked about the challenges that the Romans dealt with in conquering Britain on episodes 14 and a little bit more in episode 19. So you can check that out after you listen to this episode. Hadrian, however, needed more than just a great general. He needed his toughest soldiers. And here he went to the Danube and to Dacia. These were areas that had known almost constant warfare in previous decades. And so from those places, he gathered the empire's most battle-hardened soldiers. So between the soldiers he gathered from the northern boundary of the Roman Empire, plus he grabbed a few detachments from a variety of other Roman legions, again, probably many of them veterans, Hadrian was able to give his general an army of perhaps as many as 100,000 soldiers. This would be around one-third of the total manpower of the entire Roman military. Hadrian was not messing around. So this massive Roman army arrived by sea in Judea, again around AD 135, and it began sweeping through the province of Judea. And despite having greater numbers, the Jewish military had far less in terms of training and organization, and so many went into hiding. They began fighting exclusively with guerrilla tactics. They did not want to confront Roman legions in pitched battles. Desert caves became hiding places for Bar Kokhba's beleaguered soldiers, and the Roman legions hunted down Jewish militia wherever they could be found. And we don't know how many Jewish people perished in the Roman purge of the province. But again, our source, Cassius Dio, suggests that the loss of life was significant. He gives a number of over 500,000 Jews dead and nearly 1,000 Jewish settlements destroyed. This is a tragedy that borders really on genocide. And to this day, archaeologists continue to find Roman-era Jewish settlements that show signs of abrupt and destructive ends dating to the period of the Bar Kokhba revolt. It left an indelible mark that we still find to this day in archaeological sites in the Holy Land. But Bar Kokhba's militia took plenty of Romans out in their long defeat. The Romans lost thousands, if not tens of thousands, of soldiers. This was a shocking number of casualties. Now, no Roman source gives the exact number, so we don't really know. But we do have records of military recruitments and retirements, and these are preserved in bronze plaques that were given to soldiers upon retirement. And we have counts of how many of these plaques are found in a given year. What we see is a significant uptick in retiring soldiers about 20 to 25 years after the mid-130s, and Roman soldiers served about 20 to 25 years of service. So that suggests that Hadrian had to rebuild his army, or perhaps recruited a bunch of soldiers around the time or just after the Jewish revolt. So Roman casualties were probably pretty high. Now, what about Simon Bar Kokhba himself? What happened to him? Well, he perished, unfortunately, in the last year of fighting. Several Roman legions had tracked him and then besieged the Prince of Israel in a fort in the remote mountains of southern Judea. And with a hostile army surrounding him, Bar Kokhba began suspecting his compatriots and even family members of betraying him and collaborating with the Romans. And so while under siege, he even executed his own uncle on suspicion of some kind of espionage or collaboration with the Romans. This was obviously a pretty hopeless situation, and indeed it didn't take too long for the Romans to breach the fort's defenses. And they did what they do often in these situations. They massacred everyone they found in the fort, including Bar Kokhba. In later Jewish writings, Bar Kokhba's name, Son of the Star, was instead changed to Bar Kozeba, Son of the Lie. So much hope had been placed in a single man, and his end also marked the end of Jewish independence for nearly 2,000 years. So as with the end of the first Jewish war that began under Nero, the Romans here in the third and final Jewish war were similarly repressive in their treatment of the Jews after the Bar Kokhba revolt. Jerusalem was declared off limits to Jews and Christians in perpetuity. And this prohibition would last hundreds of years until the 7th century AD. The province of Judea was renamed to Syria Palestina. This seems like a deliberate attempt to erase any Jewish connections to their ancestral land. Additionally, harsh new laws prohibited the use of Torah law and the Jewish calendar, aiming to dismantle the very fabric of Jewish life. The Temple of Capitoline Jupiter was completed on the Temple Mount, and during its opening ceremony, scrolls of Torah writings were burned. Many Jews, fearing further Roman persecution, fled the Holy Land. And this exodus significantly expanded the Jewish diaspora, the scattered community of Jews living outside of Israel. Rabbis, the Jewish religious scholars, kept alive their faith and practices in synagogues around the Roman Empire and beyond. And their efforts ensured the survival of Jewish traditions and identity through some of the darkest centuries of Jewish history. The Bar Kokhba revolt may have ended in tragedy, but its legacy endures. It stands as a symbol of Jewish resilience and the unwavering desire for independence. It also serves as a reminder of the devastating toll of oppression and the violent lengths the Romans would go to protect their so-called Roman peace, their Pax Romana.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exocor. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.